Welcome to a new edition of the Famous Interviews with Joe Domino series. On this episode, we talk with author, podcast host, speaker, builder, and inventor Mark Bradford. His podcast interviews and experiences have taught him what life's made of, time management tricks, what multitasking really is, and how he can balance between order and chaos to benefit lives. He is a 15-plus year business owner and a full-stack web developer. It is in his nature to build things that fix, augment, or create a solution. We get into many topics during this interview. Enjoy.
Hey, it's Joe Domino.
Hey, Joe. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. How's life?
Life is just lovely. And yourself?
It's good. The sun is shining here in Kansas City. It's been a weird spring, but it's finally kind of feels like summer, so we'll take it for today.
That's exactly how it's been here. It's kind of come touch and go, back and forth kind of thing. Like, oh, it's summer. No, it's not. Yes, it is. No, it's not.
That's right. Very schizophrenic. Where exactly are you located?
I'm in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Oh, so I'm technically Milwaukee.
Yeah, technically Greenfield, but, you know, you probably know Milwaukee more. And then, you know, we're close to Chicago-ish sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I remember I went up to Milwaukee for a business trip in the 90s, and I got some pickles, and I had no idea that there was this lore about pickles there, and I'm a huge pickle fan, so I had a great time. I ate the whole thing. It was nice.
Yeah, we do that. Our state fair has that, big, giant, humongous, absurdly large pickles that are garlic and all that other stuff, yeah.
Oh, man, that's a region going right for my heart, for sure. Great to meet you. Thank you for taking a minute out today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So before we get into the history of your life and where you're at right now, you know, the proverbial elephant in the global room has been COVID this year, and it's really rearranged a lot of ways that things have, you know, people have interacted with each other in the world. How did COVID change you? What did it do for you?
Well, it took away a lot of my speaking. It sort of wiped out a speaking launch that I had been preparing for a while, so that was unfortunate. So it set things back in that particular arena. For me, it was isolation upon isolation. As somebody who's self-employed and entrepreneur, works primarily out of his home office / studio thing, you know, it was like, oh, more of the same. Oh, super. And when I first started my podcast, I had actually, one of the first few episodes was working from home and how to manage your time, energy, and resources, and how that all works. And so I was sort of way ahead of the curve. So I was just like, hey, everyone, welcome to my world.
You know, the one thing I felt when this all happened was, you know, the first and foremost thing was I have a 17-year-old special needs son. And the two things that he loves the most in life is school and baseball. And that was March, and spring training happened. You know, so we're watching spring training. We had just moved to a new place. We moved to Lee Summit, Missouri, which is the home of jazz guitarist Pat Metheny, and it was just so nice that it all happened before everything kind of took place. But I was thinking the one thing that I really wanted to do, even though we had to stay away from everybody, is to try to continue to tailor a life that I had before, which was getting out and about. We're very active. My wife and I, she has a daughter, so we go out. I mean, the week before we saw the Harlem Globetrotters, and we go out to see jazz. Yeah, so we're pretty active. So I'm like, how am I going to do this? And, you know, being in the car, going to state parks, discovering things, seeing nature, that was huge to try to get out. So I guess my question to you is, was there a part of you that said, I'm not going to make this waste of time. I'm going to capitalize on this because this is the monopoly. This is life right now.
Oh, I never stopped thinking that since a long time ago. I mean, that's always sort of how I felt. It's just like, you know, I ended up raising my kids full time by myself. So I just embraced that, and I jumped right into it versus going, oh, no, you know, how am I going to handle things? How am I going to have a business at the same time that I'm raising a 9 and a 12-year-old at the time and being in two places at once? I thought, well, or you can look back on this and say, wow, what a crazy thing. What a cool opportunity. That's kind of neat. So, I mean, it's the same thing with, you know, the lockdowns and all that stuff, and, you know, and their various apparitions and appearances and how they came to be, and, you know, depending on which region you're in and so forth. I just dealt with it and just said, you know, well, I'll do what I can, and I'll keep doing also what I can. So I guess, you know, I made the most of it.
So let's go back to the beginnings of your life. As a highly motivated person, Are you originally from the Milwaukee area?
I am originally from here.
So talk to me a little bit about your dreams and aspirations growing up, kind of your childhood and how it kind of turned into the desires that you have now.
Well, yeah, that's a long sort of gruesome story. My childhood wasn't spectacular, let's say. I was actually the last of eight and an accident, so that didn't go very well. I remember from a very early age, I wanted to be one of two things. I wanted to be a superhero, or I wanted to be a scientist. And so those are my aspirations and things. And honestly, you know, to truth be told, I ended up going right to work from basically before 18. So I just jumped into that. I didn't pursue college because the family environment and so forth was sort of difficult, and I was sort of ignorant to a lot of things, and you know, home life wasn't great. So I just sort of jumped into working and working really hard on things. And then, you know, the creative element of my brain wouldn't shut up, but I have this dual brain thing going on in which I have a very solid core of logic and logistics, and I have a very solid core of creativity, and they bump heads, no pun intended, a lot, but I've made them work together in doing things such as like web development and other sort of creative endeavors and so forth, where both halves of my brain are humming along and very happy. And so I've kind of gone in those directions in the past. And the frustrating thing is that they'll tell you, you know, you should do what you love and the money follows, or you do this, or find that one thing you're good at. But they don't say, well, what if you're really good at a couple things? Like sometimes diametrically opposed things you're just great at, or you're really good at something that you don't particularly want to do. That actually happens with people. And I had a number of those things come up where I was really great at a bunch of things, where I'm like, I don't really want to do this. It's not, you know, it's disorienting when you're really good at something and there are people who wish they were as good as you, but you don't want to do it. And you feel guilty, like, well, I should do this, but then you're good at something else too. And so I figured out my two core principles, because I got to the point, and I'm sorry, maybe I'm going outside the margins of your question, but it's sort of
related. No, you're good. You're good.
I got to the point, thank you. I got to the point in which I was like, okay, Mark, you built a dating site, you do this, you're writing this, you're writing fiction, you're writing nonfiction, you're creating a card game about relationships, da 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 da. You do full stack web development, you know, maybe you need to grow up. Pick a lane and grow up. And then I thought, well, no, everything I'm doing is based on these two core things, and it's to see things from a perspective most people don't, and to build, augment, create, or design something, or even distill something to help with that. And everything I've done is exactly in line with those two principles.
You know, it's interesting. I actually, my day job is I'm an IT technician, and I've been in IT since, you know,
nice.
So I've been in IT since the late 90s, and I'm a radio host. I got a jazz show. I'm a visual artist. I'm a writer.
Yeah.
And I've had those same conversations in my head. I'm like, why in the world have you picked some of the hardest things to do? And some of those things are the
exactly.
hardest things to make money in. What are you doing?
Yes.
But there's
yes.
this part of you. It's almost like this marriage. Like if you look at the pie graph of like the circles that arc together, you have this brain. We use only 10 to 15% of it. So if those of us that are highly motivated are really going for it, maybe it's just us understanding that we have a short amount of time. We have as much potential as we want to give our brains to have, and we just need to do it. Now, the bottom line, I think, to all of this that I've metered is I want to be the best, most available parent that I can be.
Yes.
So that's been my measuring stick. And I hear what you're talking about with your childhood. There's a lot of those things where I was the youngest and all of those things. I feel what you're saying. So you definitely want to give your kids a much better childhood experience than you had.
Well, that's exactly right. So two things. First of all, I think we emit a frequency that other people can't hear, but we can detect, because that's all I ever do is run into people like you that are also dual-brained, that are also people who get this, and I think we attract each other in some way. It's just, and I'm not all about the, you know, the secret and all that other stuff, but I seriously think that I continue to have conversations with people that I'm like, oh, what a cool person, and then we have this chat, and I'm like, oh my God, they do the dual-brain thing. So that's really cool to hear. The other thing was, that's exactly what I wanted. There were a bunch of hopes and dreams and aspirations I wanted to pursue once I got divorced, but because I had the kids full time, I'm like, I need to be stable. And guess what I did? It's IT stuff. I, you know, on-site IT stuff, web development, security, network stuff, all that stuff. And I was like, well, that's what's paying the bills. So The other stuff's going to have to wait. I'm welcome to do it, but I can't abandon the stability for the kid, which was, you know, I kept my house too, which financially, not that it was a giant house or anything, but financially it would have made much more sense to just split stuff. But I kept the house for the stability of the kids because they were going through so much turmoil and this, the whole crazy divorce and stuff that was happening, which was just absurd.
Yeah, and that's the thing too. You know, I think another part of what you do is the podcast thing. How much therapeutic easement is that for you to be able to kind of dive into story and to kind of have that world? How much has that become a part of what brings you comfort with all of these things that you already do?
Well, it's interesting that you say the therapeutic nature of it. I think that a lot of people, and no offense to them, they pursue podcasts for the therapeutic nature of it. And not that there's anything wrong with that, because I agree that mine probably has that and yours probably does too. But I think when people do that, they're just talking to themselves. And they should really just like record and play it back. They really don't need to broadcast that at all. But so what I do is I hold myself to the standard of 10 minutes of my podcast, and whatever message I have, I have to fit it in there. Unless I'm interviewing someone, then it can be about an hour, and it totally depends on the guest and what they want to deliver and so forth. So I do find that to be, it's therapeutic in a nerdy way, because I get to have the creativity of trying to craft this message in this thing, but then the logistical part of me, and I'm saying logistical, not necessarily logic, that arranges the thoughts hierarchically in a way that makes sense to people in 10 minutes. And sometimes I bump up against that wall. I'm like, oh, I wish I had more time. And I think, well, you do. You can have as much time as you want, but it's kind of fun to kind of make that a digestible bite in respect for the audience, at least. At least that's what I try to do. So my long answer, I'm sorry, is just basically, yes, I do find a certain therapy. I've also launched a secret podcast that I don't tell anyone about. It's just one that's just supposed to be humorous and funny. So, and it's, I think I'm on like 12 episodes of that one. It's just sort of for me, like maybe one day I'll tell people about it. It's in the Apple store, but I don't tell anyone about it. And I think that's pure therapy, because sometimes I literally listen to myself ramble about something just before I fall asleep and I start snickering. So, but I'm not going to burden anyone with that.
No, and I guess I should have clarified what I was saying. I think what I'm talking about more is from the interview side. You never know what you're going to get when you get in. That's, you know, and I do understand the other side of it. There's a lot of podcasts and there's a lot of different things that go into it. But I think, you know, like I got divorced in 2015. I was a single parent, especially with a special needs son. I understand how tumultuous that can be. But I also found, too, without even knowing it or being cognizant of it, when I was going through the cycle of interviews and doing things that I was doing, there's just, you don't go into it thinking I'm going to do this because of this. It's just, it's part of what you do. But there's so much that goes into that human mingling. And I think maybe understood that more because of this pandemic. The community and other people mean so much. It's almost like we've been in a sci-fi novel, and it's like, all right, you have everything you can possibly access everywhere around you, especially on your phone. But how important are people? And I'm noticing when I talk to musicians, they're like, oh, my God. You know, when you don't have that live element, what are you doing?
absolutely.
That's kind of the idea. You know,
oh, okay.
So
well,
big.
I apologize for misinterpreting your question.
No.
Going on and on.
No, you got it. No, and I like the fact that you put that perspective into it, because I know that there's a lot out there like that. Like sometimes when I see some of these podcasts with these big stars like Justin Bateman and all these other guys, it's like, it's kind of okay to know a little bit more about you, but I can get that on like a talk show at night. But when it's like on and on and on, it's like, all right, dude, I got it. You know, it's like, it's kind of like this Johnny Depp trial. Like, I don't really want to know all this about you guys. Have no interest in it, you know. It's weird how we worship those things in our society.
Well, it's true. I mean, we left England because we wanted to get away from royalty, and then we just reinvented it and called it Hollywood.
That's
essentially what we did, is we created this royalty that people, you know, and people are so fascinated by sometimes misery, but they also want somebody who's very powerful and successful to also have all these faults so that they can relate to them, which is kind of like how superheroes work, at least in the Marvel universe, because, you know, everyone has a trait that you can identify with and so forth. But back to your question about the interviews, oh my goodness. Those have been so interesting. So interesting. You know, I interviewed Scott Adams. I interviewed, I was one of the last people to talk to John McAfee before he died. And that was so interesting. I mean, his life story is just crazy. I mean, you know, he worked at UNIVAC, IBM, NASA. You know, he founded, you know, McAfee, the first antivirus software. You know, it's worth millions, and then it was suddenly worth zero. And he comes to the United States. His brother lends him $400, which he promptly spends on a prostitute, and then ends up marrying her. All this is bizarre.
Oh my, dude! The fact that guy's story, the fact that you interviewed him, and that was one of the last. That's gold,
yep,
right there.
It's amazing. Like to talk with him, and even like he gave me a few inside things, and you know, it leads me to have certain suspicions about his means of passing away. But you know, I'm not going to get into that. But some of the things he told me was just about certain things that are coming, certain things that you know he had established, and he was way ahead of his time on so many things. And you know, crypto and all the other stuff, he had his own thoughts on that too. Yeah, it was really gold to be able to talk to him. Just to, I likened it to being trapped in an elevator with a dragon, and you can kind of have a conversation, but you're gonna be really careful, and if the dragon wants to keep talking, you keep your mouth shut and stay in that corner.
that's a great visual, and it's so true, I imagine.
Yeah.
Wow. So how did everything begin for you? How when you started working and kind of building yourself up, how did you get to the point where you kind of built up to where you are today?
Yeah, so I think things started with the divorce. So I've told people too, like when I entered the dating field a long time ago, I would tell people, you know, I learned the hard way that I really would like someone to like be alone for a year, as hard as that sounds and as terrible, and then have their rebound, and then I'll talk to them. Yeah, because you knew who you were with that person, but now you don't know who you are. And like, you're a whole different person as much as that. And it's not to say that the last person was holding you down or changing you, but we do change in relationships for good and bad. It's just part of being humans and interacting socially. And so for me, after the divorce, I started writing and I started feeling this odd freedom, this, you know, and again, it may not have had anything to do with the tone and texture of my marriage, but it was an interesting freedom because I was thrust into the horrible, horrible world of freedom, you know, by you know, filing for divorce and all that stuff. And I think the writing sort of released something. It released an old dormant creativity, because a long time ago, I actually owned a game company and designed dice and things like that and all that stuff. And I missed all that. And that sort of came back, but then the thing that was really the tipping point was I took my kids to a psychologist because of all the crazy stuff happening, and I didn't want to be Darth Vader, you know, creating, or Obi-Wan accidentally creating Darth Vader kind of thing, because I'm not a psychologist, I'm just a parent. And and she said, Mark, they're unusually well adjusted considering the environment. She says, you're doing everything you can, this is great. I was like, cool, like I'm going to get up and leave now. And she looked at me and she said, but what are you doing for you? And I was like, deer in the headlights, thinking, well, I'm not. And that's when I understood that you have to take care of you or there's nothing left for them. And you get lost sometimes in parenting, especially when you're single parent, you know, especially when you're full-time single parents, all that stuff. I'm sure you have delved deeply into that where you're like, I just need to be the best I can. And then you forget about yourself and you forget about the whole self-care and self-love thing because it sounds silly. You know, but they're not silly. You really need to do that. So that's what launched Alchemy for Life, the whole what's life made of. And so then I figured out that life is made of three things, time, energy, and resources. And no matter what you do, you're spending at least two of those. And sometimes you get energy back. Sometimes you give energy. You go to work, you give them your time and energy, they give you resources, da-da-da-da-da, stuff like that.
What was it like when you finally saw your book in print? You got it for the first time. It was kind of this, you know, it had to feel wonderful with so many changes going on in your life to see something materialize in your hands.
Well, that's interesting that you asked that, because the first book I wrote was The Status Game, and it was actually a pretty small book, and looking back on it, I think it's horrible. And I'm actually just about ready to release The Status Game 3, which has this workbook to help people figure out stuff. And I even say that in there. But having a published book was actually really cool, and that also released something. It was like the whole ketchup bottle thing. Like, I was like, okay, now I need to write the Alchemy for Life coach in a book thing and explain all this stuff to people. So I sat down to write, but then because I had created such a foundation in the status game, I had to write all about that, and I created a book that was twice the size of that, and it was the status game too. And then once that was done, I wrote a book on spirituality, religion, or lack thereof, and then finally the ketchup bottle became unstuck, and I wrote Alchemy for Life Formulas for Success. And so that was pretty neat to be able to see that, to be able to just be able to have a vision. And I think that's one of the mental illnesses of being creative is that you get this vision and you'll stop at nothing to see it materialize in real life, whether you're a musician, whether you're a writer, an author, whether you're an artist. You go, no, I see that and I want to see it in the real world. And that was how that worked for me. And I just did a podcast about creatives and how they have this, and I never say I have a superpower because it's so annoying when everyone says that creatives have this special thing they can do in which they will put a huge amount of effort into seeing if a thing works. Like they'll go, you know, like if you're an artist and you go, well, I'm mixed media, but darn it, I'm going to throw this crap on there and this, and it may not work at all. And maybe it doesn't work, but they'll spend the hours and days to try to make that happen. Just like if you're an author, you'll spend all that time with story structure and conversations and things to just get to a feeling, to just get to a message, to just get to something that if you're in finance, you're going to be like, oh, I think this might work. Oh, I'm going to spend 3 days on this pivot table because that sounds like a fun thing. You know, you typically wouldn't think in those terms, but if you have that creative spirit, you will actually pursue that, and it gives you all this tread, it gives you all this experience that you wouldn't have gotten any other way.
So who would you consider a hero?
Who would I consider? I have never been asked that. I do abide by the whole never meet your hero because I know people are just still people. I have a, it's so funny you have that. In my office, I have a big giant poster that I created and it's of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people. And at the bottom, it says inspiration, direction, understanding. And the people that are on that, so I guess that must mean they're my heroes in some way, is Mark Twain, Einstein, Carl Sagan, Nietzsche, Gene Roddenberry, and Tesla.
Wonderful. There you go. Yeah. So let me ask you this. And this wouldn't even be like a hero thing, but just in general, of everyone alive on the planet right now, who would you like to meet? Just to have a conversation with, just to meet. Not even like hero or anything, just someone that you've always really liked, if you could just have a minute.
Well, I think probably Elon Musk would definitely be in the top three of people, I think, because of his accomplishments and the way that he thinks. I think it would be interesting to meet him because he's a good blend of business. You know, he's somebody who's a, you know, mad scientist kind of person, but also has a business acumen to stick with something, and he has that weird creative flame that I told you about that he wants to see something to the end. I mean, like, he was nearly going bankrupt twice and down to last few dollars with Tesla, you know, and was ready to sell it, but kept going with it. So, you know, probably Elon Musk would be one of those people.
Let's say you have a dream tonight, and that younger version of yourself, your little boy version of yourself, you run into him, and he has no idea who you are. But in his curiosity, he looks up at you and says, who are you? Explain to him who you are right now.
This is interesting. Are you charging me for this therapy? Or?
That's me.
Well, I do actually think a bit. I for some reason, time travel typically is something I think about a lot. In fact, there's a little bit of that in one of my more recent fictions. And meeting my former self is a fun thought experiment because you think about what would you, could you alter the course of your existence if you said, don't do this, do this, whatever, or did things happen for a reason because they needed to and that molded your personality? I guess the short answer would be I'm you, and I'm you without a lot of the worry and a lot of the limitations.
You know, it's interesting. One of my poets that I've read quite a bit in the past, Charles Bukowski, once said, we're born geniuses and born geniuses and buried idiots. And I always think about that because kids don't have those walls and all of those things. But what you just said is kind of the antithesis to that, which I find refreshing, because I don't think you find that until you live enough on this planet that you do get to a point where you can kind of rebuild those walls. If your childhood was a certain way, you can rebuild those walls in a way that are stronger, that will protect you and make you free.
Absolutely. I think that pain equals experience, and experience equals wisdom, and that's really the only way to get wisdom. You can't read about wisdom. You just have to go through it. And, you know, it's just like when you want to tell your kids something like, look, I was there, I was 15, I was 17, I was 20. Here's what you need to do. It's not going to work. It just never works. And that's the painful part of parenting, which is 3 P's apparently, is that you can't tell them. They have to live through it. And it's hard to stand by and watch. But that is the accumulation of wisdom. You're watching the accumulation of wisdom. There's no learning of wisdom. There's only learning of knowledge.
What would be your go-to book? What would be one of your favorite books? If you could go back and reread it at different times in your life, what would that book be?
Oh, boy. That's a horrible question for me. I'm sorry. I would assume you're probably, thinking about, like, nonfiction. And I've only just picked up a couple bullet points from a few. I guess I don't have... I mean, I would just go back and read fiction. I would read Alan Dean Foster fiction because I like the way that he writes. He writes like someone's thinking. Michael Moorcock. I think the things they wrote about were just so fantastic and grounded, which is the way that I try to write my fiction. I think that's about it. I really don't have any, special key book that has a tremendous meaning to me that I can think of off the top of my head.
I would do fiction, too. That would be more my angle of where I would go, for sure.
Yeah.
Hey, man, this has been wonderful. Mark, thank you for opening up your world a little bit with me, talking about your books. And before we go, because we got to keep the lights going, I want you to tell everybody where is the best place to go for all things Mark Bradford as far as speaking engagements, books, anything related to your world.
Well, you're very kind. Thank you. I appreciate that. The easiest and most direct is just go to markbradford.org. It's basically my hub. It shows all my books, The Sword and the Sunflower, Epic Duet. It's a connection to the Alchemy for Life coaching and speaking and podcast. So if you just go to markbradford.org, you'll find all my goodies. And thank you very much for that. I appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning into another famous interview with Joe Domino, where we cover the world of art, literature, software, and music around the globe. Most of the music on these episodes comes from the great Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. You can see these on the Neon Jazz YouTube channel. And for everything Joe Domino related, go to joedomino.com. And there you can keep all of this alive via PayPal or Patreon. Until next time.